made up my mind to live in memory.
This is Buffy's Guide to Semi-Successful Poly Relationships in the Past. An X-Men First Class Buffy the Vampire Slayer crossover fic, written by Paper Faith and read by Rena Jenkins. The story is rated PG-13, contains warnings for polyamory, panicky angsting, and Buffy, and is the direct sequel to Buffy's Guide to Surviving in 1962.
Those happy hours that we once knew, though long ago, they still make me blue.
Okay, so saving the world is a whole lot easier when there's a big ugly monster with an X that says, stab here to save world. Like the judge. The judge was easy. Blow him up, mop up the mess, move on with life. Or Adam. Rip out his heart. More literally than Buffy likes to remember. Thank you. And everything is cake and sunshine. And first Slayer nightmares, but whatever. Having your cake and eating it are two different things. Glory was easy, too, once they had her figured out. But this is hard. Either that, or Buffy's problem-solving skills are restricted to hitting things really hard, which is incredibly demoralizing. Seriously. Saving the world is old hat. Why is she giving herself a migraine over this? Oh, right. Because this time, it's not monsters screwing the pooch, but two men that she happens to be sleeping with. Two men who both act with the best of intentions. Intentions that are going to set off a 60-year-long guerrilla war between mutants and humans and mutants and mutants. How many lives? How many useless, senseless losses? How many dead children? And it's all going to be on Charles and Eric, on their stubbornness and their pride and their love for each other. And Buffy doesn't know how to fix it, how to make them see before everything goes to hell. So she's been sitting here for the past 4 days, scribbling out plan after plan, variation after variation, before inevitably balling it up and throwing it against the nearest wall. She always gets up and collects them, always burns them until there's no trace of them left. And then she starts over. And over. And over. And her limited knowledge of what actually happens to split up Eric and Charles forever isn't helping. So she starts over. And over. And over. Because somewhere in the facts and the people, somewhere in the neat lines of history books, there has to be a way where no one dies. A way where the boys stick together, united instead of divided, stronger. She just can't figure out how. If she keeps Eric away from Cuba, there'll be a new world war. If she keeps Charles away from Cuba, Eric will blow up all those ships. If she kills the bad guy, Eric will probably still go off the deep end. If she doesn't let Eric kill the bad guy, he'll get away and it'll start over. If she makes Charles kill the bad guy, Eric will definitely go off the deep end. If she keeps everyone away from Cuba, the world will end in a nuclear holocaust. If she tells Eric that he's going to ruin everything, he'll go off the deep end. If she tells Charles that he'll ruin everything, he'll try to fix it and make it worse. If she tells both of them, they'll accuse each other, and everyone will die. If she pulls someone else into her plans, the margin for error is too big, and everyone dies. If she goes after the bad guy alone, she dies, and then everyone else follows. If she goes after the bad guy's henchmen, the fight on Cuba might end faster, But Eric will still fall into a murderous rage, and Charles will still say all the things Eric doesn't want to hear. If she keeps the boys away from Cuba, everyone dies. If she takes only the boys and no one else to Cuba, everyone dies. If she keeps Moira away from Cuba, Eric goes off the deep end and everyone dies. With a scream of frustration, Buffy throws her pencil away from her, swipes an arm across the desk, clears it all off. She wants to hit something. More than that, she wants to cry. There has to be a way to keep Charles and Eric from ripping themselves apart. There has to be a version of this where they stick together. A version where she gets to have her cake and eat it, too, at least for a little while. Until gay marriage goes through or something and they can ride into the sunset together and she can go her own way. Oh, are you kidding, Buff? She's been sleeping with them for 3 months now, and it's long since stopped being a booty call. Until she holed herself up in her room to save the world with pen and paper. She had never even slept in the bed across the room. She'd tried occasionally, but one of the boys, usually Eric, would inevitably come by to collect her, and they'd go and have flexible, beautiful, funny, amazing sex, and then fall asleep in a dog pile. And in the morning, the boys would go back to saving the world, and Buffy would go back to teaching the kids hand-to-hand or mulling over all the ways those two could hurt each other. She pushes angrily away from the desk and paces the room a few times. She's tired. She's exhausted. She's drained. She's all the synonyms she never learned in advanced English, and she hates how useless she is, how helpless. She hates how time is running out way too fast, and she can't fix it. There's no portal for her to jump into, no bad guy for her to kill, nothing to sacrifice. Charles and Eric and how stupidly in love they are is what it comes down to. How stupidly in love they are and how badly they can hurt each other. Charles thinks he understands Eric because he saw his memories. But Buffy knows seeing and living are never the same thing. Eric thinks he knows better because he has the scars to prove it. But he's wrong, too. She sits with them sometimes, and they play chess in the evenings, discussing the future of mutant kind. She sees every damn time how they completely talk past each other. They're having two different conversations, and it's like having two magnets that repel each other and trying to push them together. You can be Superwoman and still not manage it because there's something in their very nature that keeps them apart. Polarity, whatever. And it hurts trying to shove them together. Because there's this thing. All it would take to get them to fit together perfectly would be for one of them to change a little. Flip the magnet over and they'll stick like glue. But neither of them will change simply on her say-so. So here she is, trying to fit together pieces that don't go together, watching them race towards doomsday, and whatever other metaphors she can't think of right now. With a bitter sigh, she slumps on the bed, flat on her back, arms spread on either side. It's possible, just a tiny little bit, that she maybe cries a little bit. But there's no one around to see it, so it's fine. The door opens quietly when she's just about frustrated herself to sleep. She rolls over onto her stomach, waves a hand vaguely in the direction of Eric's quiet footfalls, and grumbles into the bedspread. Shitty company tonight. Go away. Eric, being Eric, and thus never listening to anything anyone tells him, doesn't go. Buffy is not grateful. Really. The bed dips on her right, and she has to strain not to roll into him. He notices, of course, and bounces. Asshole. She flops into his side helplessly and glares up at him balefully. I said go away. I'm no fun tonight. He flashes all his 232 teeth at her and wraps a few strands of her hair around his long, elegant fingers. They're stupidly sexy fingers, and he knows what they do to her. That is no reason to hide away here. Sure is, she retorts, trying to roll back onto her stomach to hide her red eyes. Fish eyes are not sexy. Unless you're a fish, possibly. Buffy is no fish, and neither are the boys, to the best of her knowledge. She might be going a bit nuts. Let's blame it on sleep deprivation. Don't want to drag you boys down with me. And that earns her a snort. You don't expect it from the way he looks down his nose at everyone, but Eric is a world-class snorter. Charles could feel your foul mood all the way across the mansion. Hiding is useless. This time, she simply tugs on her hair until he lets go, rolls over, and buries her face in her hands. Sorry. Yes, he agrees, and she bites her lip and doesn't tell him that prim and proper Charles has been rubbing off on him. Boys rubbing off on each other. Did you want to tell us what's wrong? She shrugs, and since that's not going to get rid of Eric, adds with her face still buried in her hands. Everything? A few more details might help, he observes. And God, he probably thinks he's being so slick. Being the grown-up, mature adult that she is, Buffy ignores him. He sighs and buries his hand back in her hair, massaging lightly. Dirty trick. She turns her head into it a little and mutters, I want to kill something after I beat it up. A lot. He chuckles. Glad someone's happy, Buffy thinks. I know the feeling. It usually strikes after Charles tells me everything will end well if we only have faith. And that's the exact damn point, isn't it? I can't figure out how to keep both of you alive and the world in one piece. Eric is suspiciously silent. I mean, I'm pretty sure I know how it needs to go down, what needs to happen and what can't, but it's not like I can just draw you a picture and tell you, this is how we do it, and I don't know how to make it happen. You and Charles, you're like stupidly smitten with each other, even if you won't admit it, and things are still going to go so wrong, and I don't know how to fix it. Eric stays silent. Well, mostly. After a minute or so, he starts making this slow little humming sound that happens when he talks to Charles. It's weird, because it's barely audible, and Eric has no tells. But he hums quietly when he makes with the mind phone with Charles. She closes her eyes. Why? What? The hand on her head turns rough as he pulls her upward by her hair, refusing to let her hide. She glares at him, furious at being manhandled, but before she can bust his balls, he repeats, sharper, Why? She yanks her head back, rolls away from him, and ends up standing at the foot of the bed, half falling into a fighting stance on instinct alone. Why what? Why can't you just tell us what you need us to do? She sputters. It's totally undignified and she's not proud of it, but she sputters like a teenage boy that just got caught with a porn rag because you love each other. You're like, when I was growing up and I imagined the perfect relationship I was going to have one day, I imagined the two of you, okay? I mean, with less dick, obviously. But the thing where you just sit next to each other for hours and never get bored, and how you get that creepy little stalker smile when Charles does adorkable things, and how you fight all the time, but still automatically head for the same bed at night, okay? I know you don't do mushy stuff, but you're perfect in a very twisted, damaged, and slightly screwed up way, and it works for you, which is awesome. She takes a deep breath and tries not to look at Eric because she knows he's going to look about as expressive as a stone wall. And she can't see that right now because she's rambling, and she needs to ramble because if she doesn't say all this, she'll explode and everyone will die, and she wants to hit something or kill something or aim a rocket launcher at something. Anything except for this emotional roller coaster of all the things she could do wrong. And she hates this. God, she does. And then here I am, and I'm trying to figure out how to fix everything without telling you that you're going to fuck up so badly that the world is still going to reel from it 50 years from now. Because that's what's going to happen. Charles is going to screw up, and you are going to screw up, and I would tell you if I could, but I've seen enough sci-fi movies to know that that's not how it works, because you're perfect. And why would you believe me if I told you some fantastical tale about how you're going to try and blow up half the world, and Charles is going to say the exact wrong thing, and then there'll be bullets and accusations, and everything is going to go down the drain, and why would you believe me, huh? I'll tell you, and you'll tell me I'm nuts, and send me away, and then what? I can't fix this. I tried, and I can't. Everything I do, everything I don't do, I can't fix you. She screams and stomps her foot because she needs to hurt something. And this time she really is crying. And Eric is still sitting there, and he's watching her. And she mentally replays everything she just vomited at his feet and realizes that she already did tell him, And she does the only sensible thing. She runs. With a choked-off, sad little sound, like the hurt bird Dawn brought home when she was 8, Buffy turns and runs. She makes it all the way to the door before she crashes into something warm and squishy, and Charles wraps his arm around her to steady them both and says,
"Oh, dear."
And she wants to scream at him, and hit him, and save him, and be back in her year, her time, her place in the world. Her little corner of the universe where she is the slayer and not a woman. Where she kills things instead of falling in love. Where mutants are useful allies and nothing more. Where she knows who she is, and what her job is, and what she's going to die for. Slayer. Slayer means kill. Slayer means alone. Bed of bones and no trees in the desert. Slayer means never having to have your heart break over two boys who love each other and will hurt each other so badly. "But that's not who you are," Charles whispers in her ear. And she snarls at him for reading her thoughts because they are hers, and they are all she has left since she got kicked back in time, and they showed up to pull her apart piece by piece. Until all that was left of her was this sobbing, helpless mess. She isn't that girl. She hasn't been that girl since her first lover held a sword to her neck and told her there was nothing left. She hates herself for becoming that girl again. And then Eric's there, warm at her back, arms around her shoulders and neck, holding her loosely. He always goes for the potential kill moves, necks and naked veins, but she never minds because that's how he makes sure they're safe. And since when does Buffy Ann Summers need someone to make her feel safe? "You're just stressed," Charles goes on. "Stressed and lost. You're not weak, Buffy. The farthest thing from it." She snorts. "True facts. Not." "But you do not have to carry the weight of the world." "One girl in all the world," she grumbles back, thinking she should try to get away because she still said all those things. Oh, God. But she isn't moving. "Not anymore. This isn't your fight. It's ours. It's our responsibility." She goes to tell him no when he talks right over her. "I've seen it in your mind, what we do, what we must do. You were spying on me? You promised to stay out. Because the last thing she needed was the telepath up in her brain, picking up all she was trying to hide from him. He shrugs, unapologetic as always. Jerk. You did not come to bed, he defends, which, what? Not really up for a romp in the sheets, she snaps, petulantly, because, seriously, that's his excuse? No sex, so he goes and spies on her? Eric's arms tighten around her neck, but it's Charles who talks, because Eric always lets Charles talk. You sleep with us, he says. She rolls her eyes, finally looking him in the eye. Well, duh. Buffy, he scolds. Does she look like a 5-year-old? You sleep with us. We were worried when you didn't come to bed and kept the door locked. We were afraid. Eric makes an indignant noise. Charles rolls his eyes. All right, I was afraid that you were leaving us. She blinks. Where else would I go? I think I got fired from every waitressing job between here and Louisiana. Eric laughs into her hair, tightens his arms a little more until she either has to step into his space or not breathe anymore. She goes. She doesn't get it, he drawls, all slow and sweet, the way he really isn't. Maybe an elbow to the gut would teach him not to poke fun at unstable women with superpowers, Buffy thinks. But Charles taps her upper arm in quiet warning. Damn mind reader. And hey, that's anger. It feels a lot more familiar than this flailing helplessness. It's also kind of sudden, so she risks a glare at Charles, who blushes obligingly. They're being annoying on purpose. But then Eric suddenly heaves a put-upon sigh and loosens his hold to grab her by the shoulders and turn her around. He tucks his neck in so they're almost at eye level and bares his teeth briefly for something or other. Then he says, "You are part of this perfect thing you claim to see between Charles and I. There are 3 of us in this, not 2. And we would listen if you would only tell us what you know." But you wouldn't... She gets cut off ruthlessly. We would listen to you. We argue less since you're here. Charles pipes up from the peanut gallery. Before you came, we fought the same way we fight now, but we did not go to sleep together afterwards. And you sit with us too most evenings, reading while we play chess. Buffy, you are part of this. Please, believe that if nothing else. You are 1/3 of this relationship. We do not sleep well without you, even if Eric will deny it. And we do not like to see you like this, shut away from us, torturing yourself with possibilities. I've seen what's in your mind, the scenarios you've painted, and it pains me to admit that they all seem plausible. We are rash, Eric and I, and too stubborn. Out loud, he finishes with, "You balance us, so please, tell us what we need to do." And to top it all off, he sends her a mental image of 2 magnets with opposite polarity, bouncing off each other. He inserts a nice little cube of metal into the image, and bam! Magnets adhere to cube instead of glancing off each other. Neato. She's the cube in this metaphor, isn't she? I can feel your smug smile back there, she tells him, and then sort of stops, because, well, she's the cube in this metaphor, isn't she? He slings his arm back around her waist, leaving her neck for Eric to latch onto, hand going to her nape and squeezing a little, and she realizes that this is sort of their thing. Eric playing with her hair and neck, Charles holding on to her waist. They do it when they stand like this, when they're kissing, when they're sleeping, or even, God forbid, snuggling. It's a thing. Like Eric humming when he has Charles in his head, and Charles automatically quirking that skewed little smile when he catches Eric's gaze across a room. A thing. Their thing. This is a thing. Huh. You mean... Yes, Eric sighs forcefully. Her God, you are more stubborn than even Charles. Don't swear at me in German, she snaps. Knee-jerk reaction to hide how Eric speaking German turns her on. Behind her, Charles snickers. She shakes them both off her to make her way back to the bed and sit at the edge. Okay, so they're a thing. A relationship thing. And she's apparently not had a relationship in so long that she doesn't even recognize one anymore when she's in the middle of it. Not that this is conventional, what with there being three of them and illegal acts happening in the bedroom at all hours, but... She guesses a hot threesome relationship is slightly less awkward to mention over dinner than hot threesome fuck buddy ship. So... They're in a relationship. An equal one. And if, when, she tells them about Cuba, they're going to listen. Because they're in this together, all three of them. They'll listen because it'll be her doing the talking. That's good. Not like it was in the history books. Which means she's potentially blowing up the universe anyway by changing the past, but whatever. Save the world by telling your two mutant boyfriends what not to do when trying to avert nuclear war. It's not a clearly labeled X, but she guesses it'll do. She grins. Charles beams back at her. Eric groans, pretending to hate the mushiness of the whole thing. When really, he's just as smitten as they are. Both of them. All of them. Three of them. Yeah, she figures. It'll do. The end.
They say that time heals a broken heart. But time has stood still since we've been apart.
Yeah. I can't stop loving you.
I made up my mind.
Reader's notes. The intro-outro music for this podfic is the song I Can't Stop Loving You, as performed by Ray Charles. Just like how in Buffy's Guide to Surviving in 1962, the music was Stranger on the Shore by Mr. Ackerbilk, which was the number one song on the Billboard Top 100 for 1962, well, I Can't Stop Loving You by Ray Charles was the number two song on the Billboard Top 100 for 1962. And since this is the sequel, I thought number two was good for that, and also, you know, timeline appropriate. And also a lot of the lyrics talk about remembering the good times that were in a relationship. And I really liked how basically all of Buffy's knowledge of the future in the story was things she was remembering from her own future. And I don't know, it all just made sense in my head that it felt really good together. Thank you for listening, and have a nice day.